Welcome to The Local Point. My name is Andrew Day and I'm the leader of Warwick District Council. This is an informal, behind-the-scenes conversation with people who are shaping the policies and programs, touching lives right across Warwick District and thrashing through some of the real issues we're working on at the moment across the district. Welcome, guys. It's The Local Point. Again, another month has passed, and here we are at 1 Mill Street. Spring feels like it's coming, but certainly election season is, and definitely budget season. So today's session is going to be very much around the financial plans for Warwick District in the year ahead. And I'm delighted to have with me return visitor, Councillor Richard Hales, our portfolio holder for finance. Welcome, Rich.
Hi, all.
Good to see you. Well behaved as usual. Only just started his beer, mind you, so who knows what's coming. And we've got Councillor Chris King. Welcome, Chris, from the Clarendon Ward. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
In the spirit of good cross-party working and trying to build a budget that's good for everybody, it's good to have you both along so we can get different views and how you've come about forming the budget that we have today. But as Chris is a new boy, if you like, to The Local Point, it's really good of you to come along and join us. I know you didn't start this council at the beginning, but you've certainly made an impact since you've arrived. You're one of the three ward members for Clarendon. Unfortunately, we lost Jonathan, didn't we?
Yeah.
Nichols, and you were successful there at the by-election.
Yeah.
How have you found it? Are we as mad as you thought we were before you joined the council?
Far worse.
It's a crazy place, a town hall now. No, it's good. I mean, it's really good being involved with people who talk about what's going on. I've been involved with a business here at the top of the parade here for a number of years. I moved here in 2000, but it was good being part of a local business is always an insight to what's going on and makes you want to get involved with things that are going on. But it also shows you how much scope there is to get involved with what's going on, if you'd like to put it that way. So, no, it's been great. And it's especially good to be able to talk with people who are part of the decision-making process. That's really valuable. I've been really enjoying it.
Good stuff. Well, you've certainly thrown everything into the job. So, again, that's appreciated because I think it's a much easier arena to work in local government when the local councillors are active and really making a thoughtful contribution and representing their wards.
I think that's the point really is that if your background's from something where, I mean, this is what I think about this a lot, that where you have to appreciate how valuable teamwork is, then you're working with people, you have difficult political colours, but actually you're all in the same boat doing the same thing, and that makes a big difference.
I try and explain it that there's sort of four towns and all the rurals in Warwick District, and you can equally get within one political group. If you like, town-based divisions can become clearer as one group, let's say, in Kenilworth against another group. Even in the same political party, there's different views. And even in my ward, possibly even within the same ward. So I get it. The trick is trying to sort of get consensus, and that means having to work across party.
I think so. And it's also when people see that you're part of this sort of strata in the community, it brings out other people who themselves want to contribute. Mm. They may not be elected, they may not be officers, they just may be people on the high street.
Yeah.
But they realise actually that if they show their face, there are people who are going to come listen to them, and that all helps the community work.
I think that's really important. They talk about this thing, convening power, and I think particularly a district council, which is so focused on place, has the capacity to bring people together, and we're seeing that with the launch of the Leamington Transformation Board coming up shortly.
Yeah.
But I should just set some context, because we're talking the Friday before, if you like, the council meets to discuss its budget and agree its budget. So we've not yet made decisions. We obviously have done a lot of work, and we're going to debate that out and listen to other views on Monday evening and then make a decision around our budget. But when residents actually hear this podcast, it'll be the Friday after that meeting. We'd be very interested to sort of see and compare with what we're saying now, what actually
There'll
comes up.
There'll be carcasses all over the town.
It's going to be a pretty hotly contested budget, I agree.
Well, it will be, because this is, things are, a lot of people are being affected by finances at the moment, aren't they? All sorts of levels.
Very much so. And we're in that post-COVID period, Where there's a lot of dislocation we're having to deal with, and it's affecting everybody. And of course, the situation, because we've just marked the anniversary of the beginning of the second part of the war in Ukraine, that's had a massive impact on our economy, the world economy, for what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to turn to Richard now. You were with us for one of our first local points.
Yeah.
Survived that experience. But you've had it's been a really interesting period to be the finance portfolio holder right the way through challenges, as I just said, with COVID, but also now in trying to come and work carefully on a really thoughtfully crafted budget. Can you talk a little bit about some of the considerations? So firstly, we obviously are very much dependent on the settlements we get from government.
Yeah.
Can you just share with our listeners what sort of news were you waiting for, and what sort of inputs did we see go into our budget that has helped us sort of settle things down now for the debate that we're having?
Yeah, so the challenges that any council have is that at the moment, the way that government feed us, so to speak, is a year-on-year process. So we don't find out in terms of what we're going to receive until literally just before Christmas. So there's lots of work that goes in, you know, pre that period. So you probably start the budget work in August, September. But until you know in terms of the level of money you're getting from central government, you have this hole, and whether you fill that hole with reserves or other revenue, you have to wait till just before Christmas. So previously, we've had different forms of money come in from central government. There were two main forms. So one was new homes bonus, which in essence is the money that we get from the government for building houses.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is a future guaranteed scheme, which is a new scheme the government have introduced that has got a two-year rollout, as far as we're aware. So we got just under circa £3 million from central government.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. So we get £3 million from them to run the council, and everything else obviously comes through tax or, you know, other ways that we raise money.
Now, I know it's a bit of a challenging area, even for people familiar with business finance, to try and understand local government finance. But broadly, we've got two main pots. One is our housing revenue account.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to talk a little about what that is? And then I'll talk about the general fund and how big are both, roughly.
Yeah, the housing revenue account is something that the council did, I'm going to say 5-6 years ago in terms of, you know, bringing that on. So it's in terms of how we cost and how we support, you know, people who need council homes. So it's very much in terms of the council home provision that we build. And that can range anywhere. I mean, we've been very ambitious as a council, across the council, you know, all the different parties, in terms of building high quality houses in the different areas across Warwick districts. So that's the one from there. And then that's the housing revenue account that we get the revenue from, you know, from residents from there. And then the difference ones in terms of the general fund is money that goes in. It's almost like the cash in your bank account.
Yeah.
That you've got at home. So whether in your back pocket or whether, you know, you've got a bank account, whether it's overdrawn or not, that's the kind of general fund in terms of what you live on a day-to-day basis.
Can I just ask a question? So what do we generally get from government in previous years? I mean, has that been changing, say, between now and 5 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a challenge from central government over the last 20 years, probably before that, in terms of what the function is of local government and what they see that. And it, I suppose the challenge from central government is they've got 380-odd different authorities. So 380 children they've got to feed.
Mm.
And the challenge has been in terms of what level of provision you give to each of those different authorities. So previously, we used to have money come in terms of, you know, to keep us running as an authority. And then over that time, which was like a maintained pot, so it's money that we'd almost give our children every month to live and eat in terms of doing that. And what we've done over that period, over the last 20 years, is we've taken that down in essence to zero. So we don't get anything. So we don't pay, if we're the parents, we don't pay our 380 children anything to actually eat. We have to go out and find our own ways, children, to go and do that. Put it very, very simply to do that. So there's been the pattern over successive governments, and local government's a really tricky area. You know, if you're central government, you know, you've got 380 different people saying what's going on, and it's a challenge. Some of those are two-tier like we are. Some are, you know, single unitary to do that.
So to help our residents, there are three types of principal local government. There's a unitary authority, which does the functions of what we know as the county and the district. So education, highways, adult social care, etc., all in with the work that the districts do around, you know, waste and planning and all the things that we know all too well. So that's what's called a unitary authority. But what we've got in Warwickshire is Warwickshire County Council doing the first set of items, and then districts and boroughs covering off different parts of the county. So in Warwick District, as we all know, it's the four towns and the rurals. But the interesting point, Chris, is that up until very recently, we had a thing. It was called a revenue support grant, what Richard's talking about. And it was, we got it down to zero. And the government was then threatening with what they call a negative revenue support grant. I thought it couldn't be a much more Orwellian way to describe a funding mechanism than this is a positive negative statement.
Is that where you take money away from them?
Yeah. Yes, correct. Yeah. We would have to pay in to central government to subsidise other local authorities because we were so well off, in inverted commas. But what happened, I think fundamentally, Richard, is that government suddenly woke up during the COVID pandemic as to the value of having strong local government. And we more than demonstrated that during the pandemic in the business support grant process, as you know, those ARG grants. I know you were up all night with the team getting out as quickly. And we were, I think, one of the top performing, of sixth highest performing.
Seventh,
I beg your pardon.
Out of 380.
Out of 380 councils in getting those grants out. We got as many grants out as Coventry. And there are councils that still haven't distributed all those grant funds, but we have. I think they woke up to the value of local government and they recognised some of the tough questions that are faced. And we've been there before. I mean, a classic example at the moment is, you know, heating swimming pools. You know, it's a discretionary service, our leisure service. We don't have to do it. But actually, it's cost quite a lot of money through this winter to heat our swimming pools. Or, for example, dealing with big planning applications like the Gigafactory. That costs us a lot of money to process those applications. So then you've got real choices. Do we do a Gigafactory planning application or heat our swimming pool? You know. But in broad terms, £1 billion of council houses in asset value, roughly, in our housing revenue account. The rent from which goes stays in the account, and that then funds refurbishment and purchasing new houses. And we go out there and we buy new council houses off the 40% affordable share that's being built.
And we are building our own.
Correct.
We are.
Well, there aren't many councils doing that.
No, they're not.
We can be really proud of that. We're putting something back into that whole stock that got completely decimated.
Exactly.
And it's a really key thing in terms of when you look for residents, in terms of fact, you know, the quality that's being built. You know, there's obviously new developments going on in Kenilworth, and you know, I went around there last week, and the quality, the level of insulation, is excellent. You know, so if you're if you're looking to move into that, all of a sudden your heating bills are less, obviously with all the challenges we've got at the moment. That makes a massive difference as well.
Whether or not you're wedded up to net zero as a personal goal in life is kind of irrelevant. It just makes good financial sense, particularly at the moment. The other point is that with that housing company, we're able to generate income from that housing company, which actually supports our general fund. Now, our general fund is the fund we use to pay for the bins, running our planning service, doing all the sorts of services, our parks and all those sorts of things, leisure services, I'm sure many, many others. And that is around 18, 19 million, correct me if I'm wrong, our general fund every year.
So roughly in terms of our overall budget, in terms of what it costs from the council, is about 19 million. And the new housing company generates about 1.2, 1.3 million.
Okay.
So that's money we've had to find from elsewhere if we hadn't, you know, invested in it, 2 years ago?
So the choices we've got to, if you like, put money in the pot every year to run our general fund services, because the housing revenue is a separate matter, are effectively, we either do council tax, we get government grants, or we earn money. So we earn that through the fees we charge, things like car parking charges would be a good example. Or the money, for example, that Milverton Homes generates, which is circa £1 million in the last year, which is a great contribution. So you guys have been wrestling with this budget in trying to come to terms. And I'm going to come to you first, Chris. When you were approaching the budget, what were you looking at this year on that? We have a, just to explain for listeners, a program advisory board with its cross-party that that Richard is chairs with our finance officers.
I'm on that.
On that. So when you're on there, what were your, as you started, because you've been working on this for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's in, you can't avoid the current situation. It doesn't need repeating, it's repeated endlessly. The rising costs all around us. And in that context, you have to look at who needs it most.
Yeah.
And we're lucky to live in a relatively affluent area. But that means that it's quite easy to miss the invisible people. And there are a surprising amount of people who are struggling. And that number of people has grown a lot in the last 6 months for obvious reasons. So in some ways, I've been visiting. I keep an eye on a couple of food banks in town, and you get the feedback you get from them is that there's a surprising surprisingly growing demand. And it's tough. It's really tough for people. So at the outset, we had to say, well, what do we have? Well, you know, where's the discretion? What, where do we have decisions that can be made within our power to actually affect people? And it's surprisingly small, actually. The leeway you have is small. So each move you make counts a lot. And there's the political side of that, but there's also the on the ground. How do actually people, how can we affect people's lives? Yeah, it's been an ongoing discussion.
And actually, that's something, if you like, being in the circle one step removed from that discussion, that's really struck me is the focus on our residents. That's been, you guys have really just like, what is the best thing we can do for our residents at this point in time? So I'm going to come to you now, Richard. This is tough because you really didn't have a lot of the government numbers, so you were sort of working off that whilst trying to also get some shape with the Program Advisory Board and the councillors working in that team. What's been your thinking when you go into this budget this year in particular? We froze council tax last year. It was challenged in council, and rightly so. Quite heated debate, but we got it through with support, I should say, from the Labour group. And that was welcomed, slightly surprising, I think, for many, that the Conservatives and Labour group might actually find some common ground. But there you go. That's good local government.
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? Colours aren't always important.
It's where we started. And I think that underscored the value of those, that cross-party working. But in when you looked at this year's budget, obviously we're through COVID, sort of, although there's still a lot of disruption. Cost of living, there's a number of measures that have been going on around the budget. Do you want to talk about council tax reduction? There's two schemes we're bringing forward at the moment.
Yeah, there are. And probably just to go back on Chris's point a little bit, because actually the challenge you have as a councillor is you've obviously got the council. So you've got the council's budgets that you have to ensure are fit for purpose and that we can continue to maintain our, you know, the offices in there and the staff that work for us, because we have a duty of care to them, and the projects that we do and that we bring forward. So that, you know, that, you know, being very transparent, you know, we have a £4 million hole in our budget next year that decreases over the next 3 or 4 years, but there's a £4 million hole next year. Now, the easy thing to do with responsibility to the council is say, okay, well, we'll increase council tax because that generates another £300,000 a year that goes back into the kitty to run the council. But also over the last 3-4 years, you know, we've built up our level of reserves. So we put money away for a rainy day. We used some of that last year with support from Chris and all his colleagues there. And also additionally last year did a hardship fund of £200,000, gave away £25,000, you know, to the food banks, you know, which is a suggestion that came from the Labour group, which we gratefully acknowledge in terms of doing that. So the judgment was in terms of, do we do the thing for the council, in essence, put money back into reserves, because that's what it would be. It would be addressing the financial issues we've got this year and put money back in there, which is, from a business point of view, is what you would do. But the challenge you've got as a council is you've also got responsibility to your residents as well. And going back to Chris's point, you know, with the food banks, I think what's interesting is the variety and the number of people that are using food banks. It's not this traditional, you know, people in, you know, in band day housing who would use it. It's a variety of people, and people can be, you know, I've spoken to residents who are asset rich, so they're in houses that might be worth, you know, £200,000-£400,000, but actually have no money at the moment to actually be able to live. So you have that balance between doing the thing for the council where you can put money back into the council to keep it going or create different funds, or actually doing the right things for your residents. And that's the balance that we've had in terms of, you know, I suppose as a council, in terms of September, we passed a cost of living, you know, crisis motion about doing the right things for our residents.
So I think unanimous as well.
It was unanimous. So I think that's been the challenge in terms of ensuring that, yes, you know, we've got the council, but we've got reserves that were built up over that period through different investments, through different funds that we've got. And now for the right time to deploy that.
So
reserves.
So was that cost of living crisis? I like to think we've calling it a crunch because we've had so many crises. I think it's one of those words that's been overused to the point that it's lost meaning almost. But nonetheless, the cost of living was universally agreed across all councillors that we needed to support that. And that was that the centrepiece going into this budget? Were you saying, right, we've all agreed that's a priority, now let's design a budget that it helps our community address that question?
I mean, talking to the food bank people, I mean, and they're again, I mean, amazing group of volunteers who turn out week after week after week. The point that I came away with, you know, if you like, the public sort of view of food banks is people, you know, maybe sleeping rough and people on the fringes who are finding things very difficult. What the point they made to me was that actually more and more it's that people who are too proud as Richard says, they're living, they're asset rich, but it's really tough to say, actually, you know, I've got a big house here, but actually I can't buy coffee anymore. Mm. You know, I can't feed the kids, no food
in the fridge.
Well, I can't feed the kids the way they want to. Yeah. And I've got no money for treats for the kids or anything. They then find a surreptitious way through one of the other organisations or friends. They ask friends to go to the food bank. When you hear that as a councillor, you think, wow, we've got to do something about this. This is actually helping people who have no profile.
No.
They don't want a profile because they're ashamed. Mm. And it's horrible to live in a community where there is that kind of thing going on, and it's growing at the moment.
Mm.
It may not keep growing, and let's hope it doesn't. But so in the meantime, you know, on that pad, when we're discussing this stuff, that's where we think the responsibility lies. I know that it's going to be, there's a big tension here between the money the council needs itself as a functioning body, and what the residents need. And I just feel as a Labour Party member, my first call is for people who haven't got enough.
I'd share your views. I think that's very, very valid. But Richard, just help me out here, because if I've got this right, we actually grew our reserves. In other words, we were putting money back in.
Yeah.
We did better than we thought we would in last year's budget.
Yeah.
So we have put money away, which is great. It just means that we're running the show as efficiently together, as efficiently as possible.
Yeah.
And if we're growing reserves, then one would hope that this £4 million hole that you're talking about, I mean, how much of an issue is that? I mean, it's something we've got to focus on, but we are talking about how big are our reserves, roughly?
Well, 31, 32 million.
Okay, so we're talking, if we had a family finance meal, which is the way I jam jar accountant as I am, sitting around the table, we're making our decisions this week, this month, we've got savings, even though we can see we're going to have, if you like, an ongoing running cost that we need to fix. That's in the negative of 4 million. We're ahead already because we've got savings. And we're demonstrating we are able to run the council less expensively than we budgeted to run it.
But let's not forget that there are in the media there are always councils around us in the rest of the country who maybe have had reserves but are still falling into a hole. And that's why we need to be, it's really prudent to be safe.
Yes.
So while on the one hand you can say, wow, that's one heck of a saving, you know, one heck of a reserves you got there, but actually who knows what's around the corner.
And
particularly right now.
Yeah.
So we're in a position where we've got a hole, but we've got some reserves to help that, to bridge that. That deficit will be reducing, all things being equal.
Mm.
But in the meantime, it's our duty to our residents to serve them first. I think that's how I see it.
Now that is a really, really key point. Yeah. That duty is to serve our residents first, not the council first. And I think that's something sometimes forgotten.
Yeah.
Not by present company.
No. But also, I mean, if you look in terms of so you know, the proposal is to freeze council tax. The proposal is that we're going to up the level of money that we give to food banks. So we're going to give them, on the back of Chris's suggestion, is go to £52,000. Mm-hmm. So we'll give them £1,000 a week. We'll go into the food banks.
Mm-hmm.
But also the money that we got from central government. So lots of council, we use that money, you know, to actually, you know, go into the council and run the council on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
With that money we've got there, we're still going to invest in projects. So we're still, you know, we've got £1 million to put aside for, you know, investing in trees, so planting trees.
Yeah.
We've got
£1 million being set aside to plant trees.
But we've just, also, but,
so we're clear.
But I mean, we've also then got
a significant
number of
trees.
But we've also then got, in terms of what's coming forward, obviously with Riverside House, you know, proposed to sell Riverside House and to move elsewhere. So there's money there we're putting into the ICT structure, because obviously the way that people engage with councils now is totally different to the way it was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So not many people come into the offices now. Many people do things online. So we've put money aside in terms of enhancing our capability for staff, so they've got better equipment to use around that. But also we then put money into different projects. So there's money in terms of going to the Barford Community Centre. The big one for me is we're going to put £100,000 into upgrading the playgrounds for disabled children.
Yeah.
So actually what we're looking to is put those in. So children who have disabilities, so whether they be at Evergreen School or elsewhere, can actually go and use those facilities. So actually from an inclusion point
much
of view,
more inclusive.
Well, at the moment, you know, you've got children with disabilities who can't go to the main playgrounds. I know they can go to Victoria Park, which is brilliant.
Yeah, we've done
but lots of other ones they can't. So that's a key one for us in terms of saying actually, you know, you can be included and you can go there with a disability and actually, whether it be, you know, you're wheelchair bound or whatever it may be.
In a nutshell, what you've done though, Richard, is you brought four proposals. We're selling Riverside House at last, which costs us a fortune. Mm-hmm. It's net zero profile is awful, the carbon emissions. It also is £600,000-£700,000 worth of business rates and other costs. So you're taking, getting rid of that, releasing that capital. You're going to move the athletics track so that out to and put that cycleway in at Mighton, which means we can reduce traffic on Mighton Road by 30% during peak hours, which has got to be good for clean air and, amongst active travel and all that sort of thing, and really connect the new emerging communities on Mighton Green right the way through into Warwick and Leamington. So that's just from selling Riverside House. Of course, it does bring forward Elizabeth Park, you know, which that where the Yemskoda Athletics Track is now, right the way through to the that becomes a possibility now with the bridges and commitments that would come as a result of that sale. So they're all things where we're deploying our assets better to deliver more, but we're also reducing our cost of running the council. And it does mean, this is the other bit I really like about what you just shared, it means that we're going to be able to offer on the high street, on the parade, you'll be able to go in and meet a council officer and attend to your inquiry in person.
Hooray. You're referring to the information centre now?
Yeah.
The library, Pumperon Gardens.
That's being designed now. It'll go. Yeah. We're looking at, and we're wanting to refurb and reuse our town hall.
Yeah.
So there'll be office and meeting spaces in there to meet with residents as well. So we're getting back into the centre of Leamington. I'm not pleased. I hope no one is about to email me from Milverton and tell me that is the centre of Leamington where Riverside House is. I'm sorry for all those who were just about to do that. But I'm really chuffed that we're coming back. And I would love it. Is there plans in this to actually improve the fact that you could just phone somebody and get a proper council officer, but working hours, answering a phone and dealing with an inquiry instead of having to chase around? Is that on the schedule?
It has been frustrating.
And it is on that. And the other big thing from the budget, I'm digressing for a second, but the other thing is obviously the budget that we put aside for the Transformation Board. Because that's the, you know, we've got £50,000 in there straight away for the Transformation Board, which is key, because actually I live in Kenilworth, you know, but Leamington, you know, if we can get Leamington right and we can bring Leamington, then actually the ripple effect out is phenomenal. So the key area for the Transformation Board is if we don't fund them properly, is actually it turns into a talking shop and you lose the you know, with the greatest respect, that the quality of individual that's on that Transformation Board. I know you've got the launch on the 14th or 15th of March, but actually that's a real central theme for Leamington in terms of how that's delivered. So you know, that's a key thing for us as well, in terms of putting a budget there to ensure that volunteers that come forward that want to work on those actually have the money behind them.
And I was really pleased through that leadership, Rich. You've obviously put the money on the table, because now the Leamington Town Council are going to put some money down as well.
Great,
which was great. Yeah. We certainly look forward to the day when the Warwickshire County Council will also join us.
Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, but to your point there, Kevin, because we were having a separate chat on another matter earlier, but that then puts in place at last, and I have to say it's taken 3 years to get here, but a body that will survive the electoral cycle.
Yeah.
That aligns all three levels of local government and across party. So at last we can get some traction.
I mean, at that level, I can't think of anything else we need more right now. As Richard said, we've got so many projects on the go.
Yeah.
We've got, I don't want to be too, you know, there are things which aren't working well at the moment.
Sure.
And will work a lot better with an overarching group which can help plan, coordinate, all that kind of stuff, because it's a small town, Leamington, but actually there's a lot going on. Without that overarching board, and there's some great people involved in that. Right. So I think we've got a great opportunity to really move things forward. I've been very involved, as have many other people, in the Mini Holland discussions now for central town, for primarily a lot of it's Clarendon, but also south the river.
Yeah.
Fantastic opportunity there, because we can see from other towns which have introduced similar sorts of systems, reducing the need for traffic movements, for vehicle movements, enhances the living experience enormously. And Leamington's a lovely town.
It is.
And at the moment, it is suffering from the buses and the...
Yeah.
We can tidy it up. We can make it a lot more pleasant. We have fantastic green spaces here, the river, all these things we can make better use of if we get some of these ideas from a Mini Holland scheme, get people on bikes, get people off... Basically, encourage people not to use cars so much and do something different with the buses. It'll make a huge difference. And that's a major thing for me at the moment.
And also, really, it's a lot more sustainable to improve the quality of accommodation in Leamington.
Yep.
So that maybe there could be more people living in Leamington in the future, in good quality of dwellings. Yep. But then that makes the whole sort of, if you like, the economy of the town work better, and our service provision can be improved.
Yeah, because that trade-off, we're in that sort of transition period with the high street itself.
Yes.
The high street's not booming at the moment, but there are good signs out there already of a revival of a different nature than it was previously. Mm. Combine that with a more active professional and mixed living community inside the town itself, and you've got the makings of a really vibrant town. And yeah. I think that's what we're heading for. We have to think now. We have a history in Leamington. We have a very important heritage. But my point is about it is that that's great, and we have to nurture that. But actually, the important thing is to think for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
We want our children to stay here. We want their children to stay here. We don't want everybody to move down to London. No. This is a wonderful place to work, fantastic infrastructure, all that kind of stuff. Let's build on that.
So, I mean, I hear that Leamington Spa has won a competition to have its own version of the game of Monopoly.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say, but that's...
No, I know what I'm getting. I know what I'm getting for Christmas, but it kind of says something, doesn't it?
I mean, it does.
If to win that against other... it says something about the place of Royal Leamington Spa,
yeah.
and actually that it could be on a Monopoly board. I'm just trying to work out the four stations. I can't quite do that in my own mind, but I know there was one at Milverton, wasn't there?
Yeah.
It's quite an interesting signal, and... I think you're right. We've got to take a long-term view, and decisions like we've just taken to close the court, the Covent Garden car park and demolish it, was not easy, no. and took a lot of cross-party work again. But we're trying to do it at a time that we can then replace with surface parking. It does then mean we can work together and work out exactly what can be done on that site to improve the town.
We need to be bold. I mean, yeah, this is a time where we don't want to look back. We want to look forward, and it needs courage and energy,
yeah.
and that's what we want from our council and from our officers.
Yeah, very true.
And if we can get that, we can have a great feeling of momentum moving forward. These are not easy times, and you know we don't know how long it's going to go on for. But there's no point dwelling on that.
No.
It's the future that's important, particularly for our young people and young children, because if we don't offer them a future, then you know it's going to become quieter here. Mm. We don't want that.
But also. As bad as it is now, it won't last.
No.
Yeah. So history is...
The
wheel turns, and actually, I agree with Christian. If you're brave now and you have that vision in terms of, you know, what Leamington is going to be and the link, you know, with the university, because lots of staff, you know, work here and travel into university, both universities, to be fair, in terms of doing that. But actually, if you have that vision and you're brave and you say, this is what we're going to do, this is the bar we're setting, not everyone will like it. You know, not everyone wants change.
No.
But fundamentally, if you're doing things for the right reason... You will raise the living standards. You will raise the level of the quality of education. Not just, you know, I know you've got the private sector, but in the state sector as well. And that's vital, because actually the whole well-being of people as well will improve if you improve those facilities.
Mm. Yeah.
So I agree. You know, now's the time to do things. You can't look back in 5 years' time and say, I wish we'd done this. I wish we'd done that.
Well, and there was news out today actually indicating that Warwick District has got the same number of businesses as the whole of North Warwickshire.
Really?
Just in Warwick District.
Mm.
And we have a real opportunity, I think, to encourage business startups and more particularly grow-ons. You know, places like where we are today at 1 Mill Street is fantastic for the individual kickoff. But actually, you know, it's when they get to 2 or 3 and then want to go to 10.
Yeah.
And where are the spaces for them to go and what support's available to enable that to happen? And because this is such an attractive place for them to base themselves.
It is.
Geographically and for a whole bunch of other reasons.
That's true. But it's also, we need to make it more attractive. And I think initiatives around people movement, cycle paths, K2L, really important. We've got to really push on that.
Okay.
And the other initiatives, which makes it easier. We're building at a wider footprint now, as every community is in the country. Mm. We have to connect those people. We don't want those to be left feeling isolated because, oh, we've got to get, you know, it's up to us to do that.
Isn't the irony, though, that the new estates, Mighton Green we were just talking about, actually has really good active travel provision within the estate.
Right.
But then it just doesn't, when you get into Leamington, I can't even find a place to put my bike.
No.
You know, or certainly not safely. You know, and that is a consideration because the bikes are getting more expensive.
Yeah.
And we've got to address that, haven't we?
And that is improving. I mean, we've got more obvious bike site police and so forth. And yeah, that has to keep happening. The more it happens, the more it encourages people to get on their bikes, and that's really fundamental.
No, true.
I think, and if we can, when we get the buses moved to electric, that'll also help greatly.
Most definitely. From an air quality perspective.
Absolutely.
The other one, just on that, while we're on air quality, is there's more progress with Chiltern Rail. Looking to change from their diesel locomotives to a hybrid electric model. So they would be on electrics coming into the towns. That's what they're looking at for their new license. And the benefit of that is because obviously, particularly down in around the Leamington station and that run through, that's all diesel fumes. It goes up and then comes down from those big locomotives. That, again, will make a big difference.
Do you think either of you, when HS2 does get completed into Birmingham, Is that going to affect Chiltern Lines much? To what extent?
Well, I was talking with I went to a customer consultation thing with them and spoke to a number of members of their management, the management director. Their view is it will enable them to change their timetables, but they will still offer it as a mainline service into London. Because for us here in Leamington, for example, or Warwick, which I'm delighted to see the lifts going in there, it means that, you know, otherwise what the option is, we still have to travel up to Birmingham or to Arden Cross, but to get ourselves back down to London, which just seems sort of counterproductive.
So I think
there will be some changes, but not too dramatic.
Yeah.
It's more around the rolling stock and the offer, really, as you go. Better Wi-Fi, for example, on the trains, things like that.
So the hybrid system would mean that they go onto electric when they're in urban, in built-up environment.
That's the locos they're testing. And if they get that right, that's, I think, the direction of travel. Yeah. My own view is they should electrify the line, but I'm only talking billions and billions of pounds, of course.
Let's look into our reserves, shall we?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But coming back to the budget, guys, you've also been quite thoughtful in some of the other provisions. I know, for example, we have had to increase some of our charges, but we've also tried to support the high street by freezing our car parking
and taking down.
And I know we did things up post COVID, like free parking for periods, but it was just really trying to enable that transition back to enable, particularly through this coming year. But I was started on this a little while ago. There's the other initiatives as well around council tax reduction. Could you help us out there, Richard?
Yeah, of course. So there's two council tax reduction schemes coming forward. So one was one that we created. And when I say we, officers, so our Paul Town and his team there, created it. So it was something that was back to 2015. If you were the most hardest hit, so if you were unemployed and on benefits, in essence, you didn't pay any council tax. George Osborne changed that back in 2015, so where it was, rather than 100%, it was 85%. So what we've done for this budget coming forward and propose it is that will go back up to 100%. So the idea being that those that are in the most perilous situation won't pay any council tax at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had to get agreements of other partners as well, so we had to get agreements from the county and the police to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which was challenging because obviously the impact on us is about £120,000 a year. Obviously, it's more for the county and the police. But fundamentally, going back to Chris's point, that's the right thing to do. So those people that are struggling the most weren't paying any council tax at all. And then there was a government scheme that came out after that, which is great, not so great from a council point of view because you've got two schemes. None look exactly the same.
Trying to explain it.
Trying to explain it is tricky. But in essence, that's a fund of money that's been put aside again to help those people. So in essence, it's two schemes that come forward. But fundamentally, our scheme that's come in is a situation whereby if you're on benefits or if you are, whatever issue's going, and again, it's value through the officers that there's no council tax there at all, which is fundamentally important.
So if you're
really
on a means-tested benefit,
you
do not pay any council tax if we vote this through,
which
I'm expecting us to,
which
is significant. So for those people on the lower, on means, that's hundreds of pounds. I think about £250 a year saved.
It makes a big difference. We can all think right now of basic items in the supermarket, which in the last year, and the prices have just gone silly.
Pasta's doubled. So pasta's doubled from 40.
A basic loaf of white bread.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. And I mean, we're not talking. So I mean, this is really.
It's bread on the table. Literally bread on the table. And then the other scheme that's coming through is all about supporting people that are having trouble paying their council tax. So it's different but similar.
Yeah.
The government's helping us with that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So where I'm coming to is it feels that the thought you've, through the program advisory board, the cross-party work that's gone on, is you brought forward a budget that is a, if you like, a package of items, whether it's a council tax freeze, every householder gets a freeze on that, whether it's looking at the council tax reduction scheme and how that particularly focuses on those on that have got means-tested benefits, all the way through, really, you've tried to knit something together that is complete and covers the every resident in the district should benefit from, as I understand it. Yeah. So, which is important, but yeah. most particularly those with the most limited resources, which is only fair and only right. Yeah.
It is. I mean, the challenge is that obviously the district council are responsible for, you know, collecting council tax. Yeah. So I suppose the challenge to our residents is that when their council tax comes through, so we're aware that the county have gone up by £62 on a band D. So you've obviously got bands A to H. So band D is the average. So on a band D average, you'll go up by £62 from the county. The police have gone up by £14 on that band. And then the parishes and towns have gone up by, some have gone up by, Kenilworth have gone up by 10%. Warwick have gone up, I think they're frozen there. But there's a variety of ones in terms of it. So the actual council tax for people will go up. Mm. But our level that we do, we've frozen ours for 2 years in the row, which is the key message.
So we've got most of our, was it 75% of our properties are band D or something like that?
Yeah.
Most their amount of council tax, again, I can now remember this number because it's been frozen, but will be for 2 years, is £176 a year.
85p.
And 85 pence. There's the man who counts the pennies. Very good. But that £176 and 85p has stayed the same now for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And for this coming year. The other council's taxes have gone up, except for Warwick Town.
Yeah.
But what that means for our residents is, along with the council tax reduction scheme, particularly for those on them, is none of they will not pay any council tax if you're on a means-tested benefit on all of those.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now, just in combination terms, it's a very small amount. I mean, £176, I would say this at 85 pence, out of what is north of £1,000.
£1,200.
£1,200 is a relatively small amount. For your £176, listeners, you get your bins taken away, your leisure centres, your parks, your planning service, etc., which is probably about the same as some people pay for their streaming services, I guess. Who knows? But my point being is it is a challenge, and I'm not sure if we're going to be able to continue to do this, but certainly this year, that's the judgment that you brought to the debate at council.
I think a lot of the conversations I have with when I'm door knocking come round to waste collection. Mm. And there's been a massive change for us all there, the 1-2-3 system.
Oh yeah.
And it's difficult to express how much the cost for the community is of dealing with waste. Mm. I mean, it's very easy to, you know, figuratively open your door and throw your waste out.
Mm. Yeah.
But actually, for the authority to get rid of it in a way which is trying to be as useful as possible and actually genuinely push on the recycling process, which is a very complicated process when you get to, you know, national amounts. It's a huge challenge, and we're by no means finished. This is a challenge nationally. Mm. So we're doing our bit locally, but it's a massive stress on the authority. Mm. We have to acknowledge that.
And it did. I mean, we, Richard will correct me, but in round terms, we had to find an additional £2 million to support the waste contract when it renewed at last August each year. Now, out of a £19 million budget, £2 million for, frankly, just taking your rubbish away was a real stretch. And that's why we had to be as creative as we could.
Yeah.
And as you know, we focused on resident benefits. And for some, the blue top bins have been a boon instead of sorting your recycling out. For others in towns, particularly, we recognise that's been more of a challenge. Yeah. And we're working to try and resolve that.
Yeah.
The food waste has been remarkably popular and makes a massive environmental impact. Mm. Because we can now create fertilizer instead of buying it from Mr. Putin and energy. Hallelujah. And we're not also creating methane gases in our landfill. So, but the other thing you guys did in your budget is you still got your money in there for the materials recycling facility that we're building with other councils at Sherborne, which is that robotic sorting. So those blue bins, all that recycling, we're going to get properly sorted out and make that too. But you are... you're spot on, Chris. The job's not done. It's not finished. We've got a lot more to go, but we're going, I think, now in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm personally, I find it an issue in Clarendon. I don't know, listeners might or might not agree with this, but I'd like to see our streets cleaner.
Yeah.
So that's something which I'm worried about, concerned about, and trying to, you know, improve that environment. But again, you know, we have cost imperatives here. But I like to think that we get a lot of feedback from residents, and that's really important. Mm. So we're on it, and we have to keep pushing on that, because a clean town is a very pleasant town. Mm. But I think that's something which we all have to think about. Yeah, it's easy to drop something in the street and open the window and drop some litter on the pavement. But actually, imagine if that's your living room. Well, you wouldn't do it there.
We both work on it. We serve on a working party looking specifically at that, don't we? And yeah. I'm very mindful of the fact we have many students in our town,
yeah.
and we welcome them, and yeah. that's wonderful for town at one level, but we locus parentis, you know, we're also parenting them at one level, and part of the repercussions of that is around the waste issues we yeah. get on the street, and that's yeah. got to be fixed.
Yeah.
And I think getting more and more the landlords involved in helping resolve that problem yeah. through the yeah. additional licensing.
Yeah, which we're working on, and that's yeah. and that's moving in the right direction at the
yeah.
moment.
Yeah, but it's, and there's, and there's a more lot, to be done. Huge amount more.
And I do think on a council level, I'm very concerned that we tighten up some of our own yeah. parameters for the yeah. planning applications on HMOs and PBSA. Yeah. There are, you know, we've got some canny people putting in applications at the moment. Mm. They're businesses, they're individuals, but they're canny. Mm. And we've got to be just as canny. And we've got to get one foot ahead of the game here. So that sure. the community is deciding what we want.
Yeah.
And it's not being, you know, not being dictated to us, because we're not building the right framework.
Exactly.
We need to build a framework that suits us. And I'm sure we can do that moving forward. We've got the right people in the right places. We've just got to address it when the time is right.
But it's about having that vision. Because if you've got the vision in terms of what you want, you know, your towns to be, then you work to that vision, don't you? Mm. So going back to your yeah. point, if you've got that vision in terms of what Leamington, Warwick, Kenilworth, Whitnash, you know, whatever it is, you've got a vision of what you want to. And I think that for the next council, that's a really key one, because you've also got the local plan coming forward in the next council. And if you don't have that real vision in terms of, through consultation, you know, with residents, in terms of what that looks like, you get the chance of being overtaken by, you know, developers who will come in, who maybe won't have the best interests of what's, you know, there for the different towns, and have got, you know, different financial interests instead. So I think that's the challenge in the next council, is about making sure early on that consultation with residents, what each area looks like, and also then the involvement with county, because, you know, we can't continue to build as we are without the infrastructure going in there as well.
Mm.
So I think that's the thing for the next council, really early on, about getting that joining up yeah. thinking.
I agree. I think certainly from, well, one of the things we learned from the previous council and some of the issues faced there was the importance of running a proper and thorough community consultation.
Mm.
And I'd take case in point, highly topical at the moment, at Newbold Common. There's a lot of divergent views and interests in such an important public open space, a beautiful open space, and I get that. So working hard, really hard, to do the consultations, which had been run over quite an extensive period and were very well supported against a master plan, means that we're not going to get blown off course by the one or two or three that decide, who are well organised, who decide to scream the loudest. Because very often the silent majority, whom we represent, are not frequenters of Facebook and other public domains. And it's very challenging when you're being confronted with that politically.
I think on that sort of general topic, social media has taken a role which was difficult to anticipate, and it's very difficult to actually negotiate around. So, the individual voice given social media platforms suddenly counts for a lot more.
Yeah,
very
and
amplified.
That, and in a way, that cuts out consultation that used to be the main tool, if you like, the main implement for. So that's something which is a constant issue which we're learning still to deal with, and it's a constantly changing one. So it's a complicated situation right now.
And you're right, when consultation's done, it shouldn't be static and suddenly finish.
No.
That it's a keeping the information flow and really being energetic around that. I mean, probably a final area for us to talk on. One of the other key pieces that came forward, or will be coming forward on Monday at Council, apart from the budget, of course, is the motion that the Chair, Minnie Mangat, your colleague, Labour Group leader, is bringing about debate, not hate. I know it's a local government association initiative off the back of really quite appalling, you know, two MPs murdered and quite an appalling array of abuse.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's your views on that? I mean, I know I'll probably hear them in the chamber on Monday night, or residents, if they're listening now, can wind back and play back that. Well,
I would summarise that before Richard gets in, and I can't break in when he starts speaking. But I would summarise that by saying we don't have the greatest role models in London.
Mm.
I think most people would agree with that. But if you, for those, I mean, what incentive is that, you know, for young people to turn on the Parliament TV or listen to Today in Parliament? It's not great.
No.
And the level of discussion, public discussion at public level, again, social media has a lot to play for it, to play with it, and it's a tricky one.
Mm.
But I think it's enormously important. I mean, Minnie's motion across the board, we can see it in all areas. Look at the issue that Labour Party had to deal with anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Wherever you look, and they're not alone in that.
No, not at all.
So we all have to face it every day, and to get used to the fact that this is a. We're living in a we benefit from living in a hugely plural society.
Mm.
It benefits us all, and that's the way we should look at it. And it's important, therefore, to these initiatives like Minnie's bringing forward are really important because they keep reinforcing that.
They're very true.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? I mean, it's difficult because in so many ways you'd look to, if you like, the Premier League at Westminster as a role model as to how we should be behaving in our level of politics.
Yeah.
But frankly, it's the last place I would be seeking guidance from.
Yeah.
I mean, do you go and admire the performance of our MPs, or is there any?
No, So my genuine view on Parliament is I think the quality of MPs in Parliament across has diminished in the last 20, 30 years. I think in terms of the level of debate, I think that people now speak, you know, in all different parties. For clickbait, so in essence, it's an instant reaction. Yeah. When I look back to the debates in the 80s and 90s, and actually there was thoughtful debate there, that people would agree and disagree on points of policy, but with detail behind it.
Mm.
Now it's about headline making. Going back to Chris's point about the social media side, and again, you know, to Chris's point in terms of trying to attract councillors in, I think it's a real challenge because, you know, if you're a councillor and you want to stand, you know, you almost open yourself up to a torrent of abuse in terms of whether it be about brown envelopes or whether it be about, just everything in terms of, and you sit and think, actually, you know, as a council, we want to encourage people to come in, you know, to be councillors of all different parties, and to bring some of the youngsters through. But I sit there and think, why would people want to do it? You know, where's the initiative? Because unless you've got the holistic approach, going back to Chris early on, in terms of saying actually, and what he's done, you know, to give him credit since he's come in, and that approach and getting involved, actually, you know, a lot of councillors, you know, don't want to put their head above the parapet because actually you'll get shot down by certain people. And that's the problem with social media.
Yeah.
If you engage on social media, you have to accept that, you know, I go back to, you know, to a thing my old man said, whereby when you're young, you have this view that, you know, it's either black or white, 50-50. And as you get older, you realise that 5% is black, 5% is white, and 90% is grey. Yeah. The problem with social media has taken us back to a black and white.
Yeah.
And to Minnie's motion coming forward, I mean, you know, I think we're fortunate in the council that we've had very few instances of it, but actually there has to be a level of respect amongst councillors, whatever, you know, background you are, that whether you agree with that opinion or not, you will listen to it.
Yes.
And you may disagree with it, but fundamentally at the end of it, you should be able to shake out and talk and you know, be able to communicate afterwards.
Mm.
What political party are doesn't necessarily mean that you agree with everything everyone in, you know, our group says or your group says. No. You know, it's not about that. It's about respecting people for their views because that's what you taught at school. You know, that's what they're taught in primary schools. You should respect people's views and listen to their views.
So we're coming up to an election. I know every party's being challenged to find good quality candidates, people willing to stand.
Yeah.
It was very odd for me when I was first elected as a councillor. When someone said I'd become a politician, and I thought, have I? What's that? Oh, gosh, am I? You know, I didn't really... I'm not one of them. I didn't really think of it that way because I was doing it for my ward and something I really wanted to achieve for Bishop Stachbrook.
Mm.
And so many other councillors are like that. I think, though, at the end of this council, pretty much all councillors who wanted to actually achieve something, I hope will be able to put their hand up and say we've done it, regardless of the party they're in. And I hope that many of them will be able to and willing to stand in the next election.
Yeah.
Because we have achieved so much by working together cross-party and by genuinely recognising that when someone challenges your point of view, they're helping you. They're actually helping you get to a better place. Mm. So really, really listen and try and understand the argument. Doesn't mean you have to agree with all of it, but if you don't listen, your position is weaker, in my view. Mm. And you're quite right, Richard, about the sort of grey, your dad's view. I completely agree with that. But I've been really grateful for the support of other group leaders in this council and other colleagues all the way through. And we've had some really challenging debates at times. Yeah. Yeah. But boy, have we got some stuff done in these 4 years.
But I think that's where COVID... So I think that when COVID started, in terms of the fact that every ward councillor then, so when we had the grants come out originally, you know, the amount of contacts I have from councillors in terms of asking them about different grants coming forward, I think that really embedded. Because, you know, if you go through a crisis, you know, like COVID was, actually it brings everyone together because then actually whatever party, you're all in the same boat and we're all trying to help businesses and, the human beings who run those businesses to be able to get through that. And I think that was probably the point that really brought us all together, you know, and then other initiatives that have come forward, whether, you know, the climate emergency, everything from there that we've done has been, you know, uniform in terms of what we're trying to do.
So this motion's been important for reminding us that we're here to debate points, not develop a sort of, you know, a slanging match from either side of the chamber. And I hope it will set the scene for the new council, whoever is fortunate enough to have the privilege of representing their wards, they will be able to continue the work that we've been able to get going with in a positive way.
Just one last thing for me, anyway, on the public life and how you behave. If I could wave a wand in front of the Professional Footballers Association, I would do something about the relationship of refereeing and the players.
I agree.
If they could have a period of a month of offering a red card, a red card to anybody that came up and challenged their decision, they'd become more like the rugby referees or the cricket situation where actually you don't challenge. Mm. And I think so many people look at TV, so many kids look at TV, and that's the example they see.
Yeah.
And that's not a good role model.
No.
But the sad thing is, so I ironically coach kids rugby and kids football. Rubbish, I'll say crap, but crap at both. in terms of doing that. But the relationship, going back to the rugby, in terms of the respect and the ref, and actually it's not just the children, you know, whether they be 6 or 16, it's the parents on the sideline.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating, you know, I go down to watch rugby games at Kenilworth and Old Lambs and around there, and the sideline, the respect at rugby is phenomenal. I go to football and I go and, you know, I take Oliver down to under sevens game, and the abuse the referees at this level are 14, 15.
I know.
And you sit there and you go, I'm exactly the same. I would have a point, go back to rugby. If you start issuing red cards at football, I know this is going off patch. If you start issuing red cards at football, all of a sudden people will learn really quickly. And actually that's what it should be. It should be, you know, the level of respect you speak to people. If a referee or whoever it is makes a decision, you may not agree with it, but I agree. Yeah. It's a sideline is the worst.
No, it is. And let's remember, these are, if not addressed, you end up in places like we've seen in North Korea and in Russia now. Mm. You know, if civic society is not nurtured and supported, whether it's on a sports field or in a council chamber or in parliament itself, we will end up in that place.
Yeah.
And it's something we should never take for granted. Mm. And it's so fitting that a year after, as we started, you know, if you can celebrate the anniversary of a war, certainly remembering it, that we reflect on that, I think, with this motion and how important it is.
Yeah.
Well, look, gentlemen, thank you very much. I can't believe that was a whirlwind, nearly an hour. But yes, it was. Thank you both for coming in today. Chris King, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Fantastic to have you on board at the Local Point and return to
Andrew Day, thank you very much.
Yeah, good stuff, Richard Hales. Thank you, gents. Cheers. Bye-bye. It's been great having you join our conversations today. Please share any comments or pose questions for future episodes by email to localpoint@icloud.com. Thanks for joining us.